Hello and welcome to the Evolve podcast, hosted by me, Simon Bocco, where I interview successful people who talk openly and honestly about the journey they've been on to become the person they are today, sharing stories, insights, tips and anecdotes along the way. It's a great opportunity to learn from entrepreneurs, business leaders, creatives and technologists who've all taken very different paths to success. Hello, welcome to another episode of the Evolve podcast. Today I'm joined by Tony DiSilvestro, who is an entrepreneur, business consultant and mentor. Thanks, Tony, for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
I really appreciate it. I mean, I've already got a million questions already. I mean, I'm just kind of reading here, you know, entrepreneur of the year, you've had over 33 businesses. I mean, it's just crazy, but I think we'll get onto that later. The thing I'm really keen is, you know, where it all started for you. Obviously, like, it sounds like it's been an amazing journey, and we'll talk about this on the podcast, but, you know, where did you get that kind of entrepreneurial buzz feeling? Was it really early? Was it late? You know, how did that all come about?
It was kind of fun. You know, I grew up on the Jersey Shore in New Jersey, and, like, you know, it was 4 months of hurry and 8 months of worry. So my family was very focused on, we only have 4 months to make money because the winters were going to be long and cold, and we were in a very touristic town, so we didn't have any business in the winter. So what we had to do is we were, like, understanding the value of a customer at such a young age. And at 8 years old, like, I was going to the beach, and I wasn't that normal kid, you know, because I was focused on growing and helping my parents. So I go down to the beach and I see all these people coming off of the ocean. I'm like, hey, they're all coming to one spot, like to the end of the street, and they have to leave the beach. And I'm like, great. So I'm going to sell something. So I go to a wholesale candy store, buy some bubble gum, Snicker bars, everything. And I lay it all out, and I'm selling candy bars at 8 years old, my first entrepreneurial experience. But then I had a huge problem. All of a sudden, the candy started melting. I'm like, oh my God, I need a capital expense. So I went out and I bought a cooler with some ice. And then my candy bars actually started selling more because they were frozen. So it was perfect. So that's where my journey started. And from there, I just kept with that entrepreneurial spirit and started opening businesses.
And what was your first one then? Well, so obviously, well, technically your first one was selling candy bars on the beach. But from there, where was your first kind of entry into
Really, restaurants. I really got into restaurants. That's really where I stepped into it. And then from restaurants, it went into construction. And from construction, it went into marketing. Then from marketing, it went into training and then manufacturing. And, you know, so I was in photography for a while. So, I mean, just a bunch of different businesses in a lot of different industries. But, you know, what people don't understand, it sounds like a lot, 33 different businesses, but I've only owned one business ever. I've always been in the people business. And that's what most entrepreneurs and business owners don't realize, that no matter what we do, you know, it's human capital that makes our businesses successful.
Yeah, it's so true. I was having a conversation with someone that I'm mentoring about, when you've got a business, everyone's looking at maybe some hard things, you know, can this product get better? Can I get quicker? Can I get faster? And actually, a lot of the successful businesses, they should be looking at the softer metrics, you know, simple things like, be more honest, be more transparent, be friendlier. You know, because in some industries, that's actually the antithesis of the way that they work. You know, and actually being relatable, having high levels of empathy, things like that are actually a difference in the market that isn't about speed or price or flexibility or whatever.
Not at all. It's about culture and developing the right culture. And it doesn't have to be this fluffy culture in your business. It could be a very stern culture. But as long as it's consistent, then the customer can set their expectation.
And you started obviously in restaurants. I mean, I don't know if it's the same in the US, but in the UK, I think there's a statistic like only one in four restaurants will survive. It's one of the toughest games out there.
I think it's the hardest business in the world, right? Because, I mean, it's first off, it's now. Everything's now. There's no, I mean, you can have the greatest plan, but situational management is critically important. So, and if you can't, you have to take a group of people and have them all moving in the same direction immediately. So it's not like, so in construction, I have time to plan, right? I have time to, you know, look at architectural plans, build my structural plan. You know, I can do all that. In the restaurant business, it's now. So that's why it makes it a difficult business and not many people can do it.
And did you find that was a good grounding, almost pick the hardest one first?
I didn't know it.
But did it come out like that or?
It did. You know, it's funny you ask that question, but people say to me all the time, they're like, how the hell are you such a great builder? Like, how do you do? Like, I'm like, if you've been in the restaurant business, you can do anything. So like in construction's identical, right? I have people. I need people to accomplish a task or a goal. So I take a raw product, no different than I'm in a restaurant, and I take a raw product and I build a massive home or commercial project. So it's the same exact business.
And so you're kind of in a position now where you're one of these people that knows a little about a lot, but the thing that you specialize in is the understanding of people and how you operationalize that and that kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. So like for me, like, you know, being in so many different industries and having thousands and thousands, I've probably hired over 20,000 people, you know? So when you deal with that many personalities and that many problems and that many opportunities, because I never have problems in my companies, I have opportunities. And when you have that opportunity to be involved with that many people and helping them motivate and drive to the same goal, you know, you start to be able to teach and mentor and really have that experience. I work with a lot of entrepreneurs and, you know, they've had 4 or 5 employees their whole life. There's no way possible that they could ever have that experience. So that's what I do. I take a lot of time and I help a lot of entrepreneurs in that process.
And the interesting thing I also find, and I'm kind of going through this journey as well, is you're kind of taught that if you've bought, say you've started a restaurant, you then have another restaurant, you then franchise and you stay in restaurants. You know, and then when you say, oh, I'm going to go into building as well as having a restaurant, a lot of traditional mentors or certain people say, well, you're mad. You've got all these skills. You've got all this knowledge in being a restaurateur. Why on earth would you want to do that? So how did you, well, firstly, did that happen to you? And then how do you kind of overcome that? And how do you help others now in terms of thinking about a more diversified, I guess, portfolio of businesses and the benefits of that?
I've always been told I was crazy. And then my middle daughter says, Dad, stop saying you're crazy and you're blessed, right? So I've always had an innate ability to be able to function in multiple different ranges. But the thing is, I always look at it this way. And like, you'll hear people criticize, oh, it's a side hustle. Oh, you don't need a side hustle. Don't do that. But where I built all my businesses came from side hustles, right? So I have my primary business providing income, providing for my family. So I start a side hustle and say, oh, let me see if this works. They don't always work. But the best part about it, I didn't sacrifice my life, my house, my cars, my kids. I created a side hustle. And then, you know, the ones that worked, they're sustainable businesses still to this day.
And what do you find is the kind of, obviously the challenges in every business, I think it's one of the hardest things. What do you find that the kind of, from your own experience and also now with you kind of mentoring other business owners, what do you find is the biggest challenge, you know, the biggest barriers to growth and how you overcome those?
So the biggest thing that I teach all the time is, are you a business owner or an entrepreneur? And there's very few people that understand the differentiating piece of a business owner and entrepreneur. We all start out as a technician, right? We all start out as a great business owner. We have a great idea. We're great at a certain, so I can make the best shoes in the world. But all I am is a shoemaker and I'm a business owner. When you become an entrepreneur, you start to have to trust people, learn how to delegate, develop systems, processes, and procedures. And that's when you start to grow your business and become an entrepreneur. That happened in 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. For me, it was 15 years later. I finally took an apron off out of a kitchen and started becoming an entrepreneur, and I had my exponential growth from there. But so the biggest thing for entrepreneurs, it's understanding what it is to trust your employees, master delegation, create the most effective systems possible that you can in your company, from the finite details to everything, and then learn how to market with it and delegate and just create that process, and then understanding what a customer's value is.
Yeah, I mean, that resonates a lot with me. I think the interesting thing for me is I work in a business where time is money. So you said, I've got a branding agency. You obviously work in marketing. There's always this guilt that if you're not on the clock, you're not making money. But actually, if you're systemizing things and making a slicker process and so on, you're almost investing that money in your business. So I think there's something kind of interesting, often struggle, you know, from moving from being on your business and seeing I cost the business X and I bill Y, that feels good, to I cost the business X and I'm currently billing zero, you know, but I'm hoping that this is all going to come good. So talk to me about that process and the kind of psychology, because you'll probably see that a lot, I imagine, with a lot of your kind of...
Yeah, so I don't really call it investing in your business. I call it investing in your people. Right. So I haven't hired anybody in 30 years. I invest in my employees. So what I mean, so like a lot of times when I hire an employee, I have an expectation of the result I'm looking for in that employee, but they still also have an expectation of me to pay them for doing a fine job. But if you can create the system and process that gives them that ability to trust you, to be proud of what they do, and showing them upper mobility in your company, how they can grow in your company, now you're truly investing in your people. And when you invest in your people, you want to scale and grow, You have to learn how to invest in your people properly. That's communication, teaching them the why, asking questions instead of dictating. There's so many aspects of making that employee feel empowered when they work for your company.
Yeah, and one of the things is quite interesting to me, and I think probably close to your heart as well, is about this kind of vision and having a goal and having a real direction. I think lots of people can get, you know, and I've been there as well, you kind of lose your way. You're looking at what's happening tomorrow, what's happening next week, rather than thinking, why did I start this in the first place? What do I want to achieve? You know, what does 5 years look like? And actually, you're looking at the next 5 minutes or next 5 days rather than the next 5 years, and that becomes a challenge. So take me through the process of that and the important role that having a kind of longer term vision and goal means for business.
Well, you know, a lot of business owners, they get into business and they have exponential growth in the beginning, right? They're all of a sudden they're doing $5 million a year, massively successful, and then they're stuck. They can't get over 5 million. They don't know how to do it. Well, they've been blessed. And whether they're at $1 million a year, they're wearing every hat in the company and they can't figure a way out. But what they have to do is deconstruct their entire business from day one. Now that they have that experience and you want to grow, if you're doing 5 million a year, you're never going to get the 10 million a year if you continue to do the same thing you're doing today. So that's where I come into play. And I work a lot with companies that I have a company right now is doing 200 million a year, right? 200 million. And he wants to do a billion, but he can't get past 200 million because he's doing everything in the company. It's a massive construction company, but what he wants to do is grow. So how do we grow? We start trusting employees, investing in our employees. Human capital is so critically important to growth. And that's where so many business owners, you know, when we start out, we don't understand that. We're not perfect at managing people and delegating. We don't have that skill. It's learned over time, unless you hire somebody that's been there and done that.
Yeah, I think the other interesting thing is around recognizing your own blind spots as well. There are lots of things that a business owner might do because they have to, or financially it makes more sense, but you're actually rubbish at it, or your skill is in something else, and really you should be doubling down on the core skill rather than do things that you're not great at and not that interested in. So, for example, there are things that I will procrastinate as much as I do the job. You know, that makes no sense for me to do whatsoever. So, of course, I should give it to someone else. But it's took me a long time to realize that, which sounds really silly.
You need to fire yourself.
I know, I do. I'm not very good at it. And I'm lazy.
Yeah. I always say surround yourself with greatness, right? So, obviously, I know a lot about finance, but I'm not an accountant. So I don't go into companies and say, I can be your accountant, right? So you have to know where your strengths and weaknesses are. You know what I'm saying? So when I'm mentoring, I don't mentor them on debits and credits and all this stuff. I'm mentoring, hey, are you profitable at the end of the month? Well, let's invest in the top line processes because your bottom line will be there after we're done. So the thing is, it's really understanding when business owners start out, we're a technician, we're great at one thing, but then we're thrown in. We have to start piling hats on because we don't have anybody to do these other jobs. And plus we can't afford it. Right? We can't afford it when we first start a business. But as you grow in business, they don't take the hats off. And that's where the process stops. That's where the company, like you'll hear a lot of companies and founders and CEOs say they have corporate fatigue, right? They're tired. They're doing everything. They can't figure it out. That's a huge, huge problem. Entrepreneurship and business ownership is one of the loneliest professions in the world, because we're so afraid as entrepreneurs to actually speak to other business owners, to find out what they're doing, what mistakes did they make? How can we solve these problems? But entrepreneurs don't do that. We're too proud.
Yeah, I mean, something I try to do, you know, try and build peer networks and associates and things. Because like I say, you're an island and it never feels good. And I think also being in a position where everyone wants an answer from you, you know, everyone reports to you, becomes very challenging. And also likewise, if you wear lots of hats, you're going to get lots of different people in your business ask you a question about or for some support on one of those hats. So if you are makeshift head of finance, head of ops, head of marketing, head of sales, head of whatever, anyone's junior to you will want to have a sales question, an ops question, a finance question, and suddenly you spend all your time answering questions. And actually you're not really an enabler then, are you? You're more of an in-house wiki, which isn't necessarily the best way to go.
Yeah, that's where you need to systemize your system. So a lot of development and companies, you know, we unfortunately do not invest enough time in systemizing your systems in the company, but that's where those questions stop. So the longer you're in business, and every business owner I know will say the same thing that's been in business 20, 30, 40 years. Gosh, I'm tired of saying the same exact thing over and over again. The only thing that's changing is the face is changing. I'm like, well, your systems aren't in place for you to stop saying that. Because if you had your systems in place, and a lot of companies, if you look at a company that's been in business 10 years, they have so many systems developed that were a problem the first year in business, right? So we innately, we develop systems and processes based on friction, right? So when you create a system based on friction, they just keep coming, but we're never done building solutions and systems in a business. Never. You should never stop.
Yeah. And take me through that. Cause I think we kind of spoke before we started the podcast. I think scaling a business, no matter what it is one of the hardest things. And as you pointed out, not necessarily the most glamorous on paper, but systems and processes is where it happens. You know, like if you've got a really slick, really smart machine, you're more investable, you can put more sales into it, you can rest easy at night that you know that it's working, there's other people you can delegate to, you know, all of those positive things. But it feels like that things in my head and bits of paper all over the place to a slick old machine feels like a huge gap. So how do you break that down into something that feels more manageable? And I guess moving from a business owner or to working as an entrepreneur and systemizing that and that process.
So no different than the wristwatch that you have on your hand, right? So it's so intricate. There's so many pieces to the puzzle, but if one piece isn't working, your watch won't work. But we accept that in business, that we don't have every piece working together. And the more that you work towards that, the better you'll be. So systemizing your systems. But to scale, it's critically important. Like, I'll start out with you and say, tell me the name of your company. What is your brand, right? Who are you actually trying to attract? Who's the customer avatar you're looking for? Really hyper-focused on making sure you as the founder are aware of your brand, but then making sure it's in alignment with your customer. But then ultimately, your employees have to be on the same page as well. So we start there. And then I go into systemizing your systems. You can't delegate unless you have unbelievable systems, because you're trying to delegate something and you're never going to get the expected result from the employee because your systems aren't well enough defined. So we always start with systemizing everything in your company from the way. So if you're a plumber, how do you get out of your truck? How do you step in there? What's the first thing you do when you get to the front door? Right. So I work with a lot of different industries, but it's every finite detail. But then you have to explain the why in every one of those details in a system. So now I'm starting to delegate. I have a system to delegate with. That's where it comes in. And then you take in the training after that. And the training stuff, you can never invest in your employees enough with training. My training company that I own, we train 52 weeks a year. Most companies train 4 to 7 weeks, 4 to 12 weeks, and that's it. And then you ask employees after 12 weeks, when's the last time you've been trained after 2 years? Oh, I was just trained in the beginning. So they stopped investing in their employees and they're like, why am I not growing? Well, you're only going to grow with your people.
And so I think it'll be really interesting, as obviously you've got many businesses in many industries. Maybe take me through an example, almost like a case study of your own business to say, you know, whether you started it from scratch or whether you acquired it or whatever, but, you know, how you systemize your systems and the net benefit of that and what that means and how that can support, I guess, long-term sustainable growth.
Right. Well, we'll talk about the restaurant industry because it's probably the most difficult industry there is. You know, my construction company, even though I systemize my systems, but when I'm a general contractor, I make sure all of my subcontractors have systems and processes. So when they come on any job, they know what they're doing. But when the part with systemizing your system is, like I said, so it's systemizing every single aspect. When I talk about a system, I'm not just saying, you know, hey, go over there and cook that dish. That's not a system. How do you grab the pan? Where do you put the pan? Do you turn the burner on? Do you not turn the burner on? What temperature should the pan be? Every single step has to be delegated out. So if you look at franchising, why is franchising successful? It's still a business, right? It's still an owner and a business. But the thing is, the franchisor has invested so much money in process and procedure to sell that company. Every franchise out there, I've been a franchisor for 13 years. Every franchise out there is not selling food, construction, plumbing. They're not, that's not what they're selling. They're selling a system, And if you understand that, and that's where over the years, it's probably been 15 years I've been around franchising, and that's really given me the ability to understand how businesses work and understanding the critical part of a system in your company.
I remember I was looking to acquire another agency. And when I first started, I was thinking, I'm going to buy one with glamorous client base. You know, they're working with this great client and this great client and this great client. But actually, if it was a mess, it's irrelevant. You know, and I realized over time, and it took me a while, is I would much rather buy an agency that was just money in, money out, really slick machine, and think if I put more in, I can get more out. And I think, you know, whoever their client base was, whatever, rather than thinking, I've got Coca-Cola and I've got Apple, but there's no systems in place. Because actually, although it sounds crazy, like getting a big headline client is probably easier than in my industry, certainly, than getting a slick machine. You know, and it took me a while to realize that, because you're kind of drawn into other things, you know. And so
a big client, beautiful and shiny in the corner, but if you don't have systems, eventually that client's going to leave you because you don't have a process and procedure to maintain the expectation they want from you.
Also, very commonly in my industry, you run a very low margin. So you might have an amazing client, but because the processes aren't there, you waste some time over there, you waste a bit of time over there, you go through six rounds of amends over there, and before you know it, you haven't made much at the end, you know. Whereas if you had a slick process and the client loved it and everyone knew what they were doing, you'd make more money because, you know, time is money. So obviously you've got 12 businesses. You talk about construction, you've got restaurants, you've got marketing. Is that quite purposeful in the sense of there is almost an ecosystem that kind of feeds itself? Or is that a bit like back to your sweet business where it's you've spotted something in the market, you realize it's an opportunity to sell some sweets, or, you know, and you've done that. How's that come about?
Every business I've ever had is always correlated with everything I was doing. So I was in a restaurant business. I opened up a manufacturing business for bread and pastries and distributed the entire over 150 locations of restaurants all over the state. Then I have a photography company, right? So I'm needing video. I'm needing photography. I found a young photographer. So I opened the business with him. And so that fed my company. So I was getting tired of training people, telling people over and over and over again. So I developed a SaaS company for training 100%. Got tired of dealing with commodity prices and shifting. So I have a company that I'm working on right now is dynamic pricing, which is stabilizes pricing for commodities. My marketing company, same thing. I got so frustrated with marketing companies that they couldn't perform. They weren't ROI focused. So for me, it's ROI first marketing. So I was always challenging marketing firms. Tell me how much money you're going to produce for me for this ad before you build the campaign. So then I reverse engineer marketing with them and drove them crazy. So my marketing company is the same thing. It's called UR Branding, but it's a branding company first. I brand first, then I determine the value and the revenue that they're going to increase, and then I build the campaign. So fully reversing engineering that process. You know, so my companies all feed each other. So I don't just all of a sudden look at that shiny object in the corner and say, oh my God, that's a great business opportunity, and run to it, right? So because you have to spend time. If you're going to risk your hard-earned income and get into a business, I'd recommend every entrepreneur go work in that industry. So every business that I've opened, I knew the industry 100% before I went into it.
I think also it's quite interesting is if you're a customer with a pain point as well, a bit like saying you've had enough of marketing and there's no ROI in it, so you just go and do it yourself, you know. And I think often that becomes an accelerator because you don't necessarily need to, yes, you need to find your way because you're not necessarily starting a marketing business before. But if you're a customer and there's going to be some other people like you, you just build a business for yourself and you know, if I wanted it, then someone else will want it. And actually, you can also sell it because you can pitch it at a pain point solutions level. Like, you must have spoke to 100 agencies this week and none of them have promised you any ROI. That's exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm going to do it because of X. Do you know what I mean? So it kind of makes it easier in some respects, I think.
They all start out like a side. Like, it's like the lady that works in a house and she's making these amazing apple pies, right? And it's the best apple pie in the world. She's like, I'm going to start a business with apple pies. Well, that's great. But she tested her apple pies on how many friends, how many neighbors, how many houses. she had a she understood what who her customer avatar was before she actually invested in that business. And that's what I tell a lot of people. You know, a lot of people that get these crazy ideas, they want to open a business in an industry they know nothing about. And like, I love when people say, hey, I want to open a restaurant. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Because it is a difficult business. You know, the failure rate in restaurants is 95% in the first 3 years, and it's very, very difficult. But you know, go work in that restaurant, go be a dishwasher, learn the industry before you get into it. And it's the same thing with your branding company. You know what I'm saying? Do you really understand who a customer, who your customer is, what their expectations are? Because you're filling the need for a customer, right? You really have to understand their expectation before you sell anything. And I'm not a big person to sales. If you're looking at results and you're focused on the customer experience, you don't need to sell at all.
Yeah, and I think that's very true. I think if you're co-creating something, you know, or the client's thinking about how could we work together, that's right. Easier than saying, do you want to buy one of those? Do you want to buy one of those? Do you want to buy one of those? Because often the answer is, no, I don't.
Yeah, exactly. That's the first answer, right? So you have to create that empathy for that customer.
And obviously you're working with lots of entrepreneurs in a mentorship capacity now. And one assumes, like you say, they're all kind of different sizes and so on. And like you kind of alluded to, so entrepreneurialism is like a staircase. You know, you kind of hit a flat point and then you plateau, you have to get up to that next bit.
Well, great analogy.
Yeah. And so is the plateau almost the same, no matter whether you're at 200 million or 500 million or 1 million, or does it differ where you are in the scale? Like, what are the commonalities between those kind of growth blockers or plateaus that people are hitting?
So a big problem is it's typically always goes back to their employees. It always go back to the CEO not understanding how to grow, how to trust people, you know, because they get so emotionally connected to their brand. And, you know, certain industries, whether it's 200 million, but that they're just a high ticket item, that customer, right? So that customer is relevant to a $5 million customer, a $1 million customer, but they're hitting the same exact plateaus. And 99% of the time, it either comes down to they do not know how to delegate and trust, or they don't have a systems in place, and they go hand in hand. So a lot of businesses, it's the same exact thing. So if you look at like a company that's struggling, they bring in a new CEO, right? What does the CEO do? The first thing he does, changes all the systems. Right. They come in, they re-systemize everything. They fire people. They change process. But they're firing people because they felt like the systems were breaking down. Well, they couldn't execute and delegate the systems properly. The last CEO. So the new CEO comes in and builds new systems and teaches people how to delegate again. I mean, business has been around for thousands of years. You know what I'm saying? But it's not any different. If you go to Pompeii in Italy and you'll see where they grind the grain. Right. And you stand there and you look at, that was an entrepreneur one day, and I'm sure he had salespeople. It hasn't changed. But this is where entrepreneurs and business owners understand you need to invest in your people if you want to grow. And you do that. And it's your responsibility as the business owner and an entrepreneur to develop the proper systems, understand what your company stands for, the culture, the purpose of your brand, and then be able to articulate it through systems that you've built to get the result that you're looking for.
And the other thing I think as well is, although it sounds odd, that to attract good people, you also need good systems. Because I've had it many times with fast growing businesses where effectively the wheels have come off, they've got no processes, and no one knows who's talking to who, and they barely even know their job title and who they're reporting to because they kind of grow so fast. And actually, if you're very good, there is only a certain amount of time that you will live in chaos before you think, stuff this, I'm going to go and work for Google or Amazon or something that's got, that will probably pay me more and have really good systems and know what I'm doing. So I think there's always something as well, like the reverse, which is you can't really keep and attract good people without a smart system to plug someone into as well.
There's no doubt. And that's the problem. I wish everybody could start out as an entrepreneur, because then they would have that mindset from day one. But we don't. We start out as business owners, and then we have to figure it out along the way. And a lot of people lose their businesses along that way. And that's unfortunate. For me, one of the biggest pain points in my life is watching somebody go out of business, because I truly understand what it is to be an entrepreneur. You're starting a business, and then all of a sudden you lose your business. Well, it takes 10 years to recover from that loss. I mean, they're losing their house. They're remortgaging everything that they have. And now they're in massive debt because they lost the business. But if they would have actually invested maybe another 6 months to a year to develop systems, processes, and procedures before they actually open their door, their chance of success would elevate so much. But for me, that's what's driven me to help and mentor companies all over the world, because I really want to change entrepreneurship. I want to help entrepreneurs win.
Yeah, and take me through that. Obviously, for many entrepreneurs, I think, and it feels like you're in this place now where you kind of want to sort yourself out as quickly as possible so then you can help others, you know. So you seem to be sort of, I guess, bound by a kind of mission and a vision to help others. So you know, take me through that side of things in terms of where your focus is now and, you know, and helping other businesses deliver scale.
I kind of went to about 6 years ago. I didn't know really my purpose in life. I've done so many different businesses and so many different things, worked with so many different employees. And I went to a university and I got 20 kids for a full semester, and they were high level, like level 400 kids. And I said, hey, I want to take these 20 kids and I want to take them through this process of what it is to actually own a business and do this. And I came home after my first class and I told my wife, I said, I've changed. I figured out my purpose in life. My purpose in life is I'm a teacher and a mentor, and I want to give back. And my focus is to give back to the world. And if I can help even a small group of entrepreneurs be successful and change their lives, but it's not about, so like money is always a motivating factor, but money for me has always been a tool. So for me, when you first open your business, you know, is it that you want to be uber rich and you want to be, you know, live on a yacht and you want to do this stuff, or what is your purpose? What was your purpose the first day when you went into business? Because that's where I really focus. I want quality of life. I'm going to control my destiny. I don't want to be an employee for anybody. These are the pieces that so far you get into business, you're in business 3 years and none of that's happening. So what are we doing, right? I want entrepreneurs to love the experience of being an entrepreneur, controlling that destiny, having the wealth that's satisfying to them. Because some people, 100 million is great. Some people, you know, if I make 70 grand a year, I'm happy. You know what I'm saying? So money doesn't always equate to being a successful entrepreneur. So, and really that's what I do. And like for me in business, probably the most amazing thing for me is helping my employees put food on their table, giving them a clear vision of growth, making them feel happy and content with what they're doing every single day. But it goes the same thing for entrepreneurs, right? Are you really satisfied? But, or they go work for Google or Amazon, like you're saying, they've totally lost their dream. Why? We're only on this earth for a very short period of time. There's been millions and millions and hundreds of millions of entrepreneurs, but what was it for them? And it's different for every single one.
I think that's very true. I think sadly, if you read the media or you look on social media, there's any one way to do things, you know, and you've got to have this mega ambition, you've got to raise loads of money, and that's what it's all about. But, you know, it might just be some financial freedom, some independence, like be your own boss, you know, like I think ambition is one of those things that it's for the individual to set, you know, and who am I to say how ambitious someone else should be, you know? What I might feel is just way too lofty and freaks me out. Conversely, there could be someone else who I think, come on, you can do a bit better than that, can't you? Do you know what I mean? But that's not for me to say. That's the individual, you know, and people get into this game for different reasons and want to do different things.
The business scaling doesn't necessarily mean, hey, 10x your business. Are you scaling your personal life? Are you scaling your marriage? Are you scaling the relationship with your children? What is it? So if you're in business, you're already doing this, what do you want to accomplish? A lot of times when I'm mentoring sometimes more about their family life and their relationship and quality time. And how can we systemize things to give you that day off? I had a lady I was mentoring last week, a great example. She's like, all of a sudden now she tells me at the end of the week, she's like, this is the first time in the last 2 months I haven't worked past 5 o'clock. I started mentoring her 6 months ago. She was calling me at midnight, texting me at 10 at night. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is making me crazy. Right? I love that the girl's amazing. But to hear that 2 weeks ago, her to say, I haven't worked past 5 o'clock, that was everything to me. And now she's saying, man, my company's working unbelievable. I can relax. Like, she's 4 kids. I'm like, you need to stop working past 5 o'clock. So I took her through that process and really gave her the authority to trust people. And that's really what it was. She was a micromanager like many entrepreneurs are. She felt she had to have her hands in every single aspect of her business. But she had amazing people around her and just didn't realize it.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. I think, again, there always feels like the only way is just to do more. You know, and actually it's to do better or work things better, or like build trust. You know, I think, and again, in this, I'm speaking for my own industry, but you just sweat some more, put more hours in, if you put more hours in, you'll make more money, you know, and that's seemingly the only route to success. But actually, when you take a step
back, you make less money.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I think when you take a step back, there's actually just a smarter way to do things, you know. And I think that example you gave was so perfect, because, like you said, it sounds like the business was doing better and she was working less. What's not to like, you know, and spend time with the family and do the things that are important, which is the gift of having your own business. Because if you work for someone else, you're not in control. You've got no control. Go to a meeting late, go to a client meal at night, go to a business trip in a different country. When you've got your own business, you're in control. You finish work when you want, block off at lunch if you can, you know, but people don't, isn't not always in that headspace.
And if you can't do that, that's always a good litmus test, right? Like when you're in a business, right? So take off from 12 to 4 once a week. Tell me if you can do it. Most business, I can't do that. Well, we need to build systems. We need to build processes. So I'm part of a couple business like boards and stuff like that. And we always set the meetings for 12 o'clock in the afternoon till 4 hour meetings. And so many people, when we try and bring them into the organization, are like, oh, I can't do meetings during the day. I'm like, you need to be in this board more than anybody, because you obviously are not working in, you're working in your business, not on it. So, and I know that's a cliche word, but it's so true. And, you know, the E-Myth was an amazing book. And I just, honestly, if you invest in your people, invest in yourself, you will create an amazing experience. But don't become that entrepreneur. Think about that first day when you went into entrepreneurship. What was your goal? What were you trying to accomplish? And then reverse engineer everything to get back to that point.
Couldn't think of a better way to finish. I think it's a perfect line to finish. So really appreciate it. I've learned lots, and I'm sure many people that are listening will think, I need to speak to Tony. I've got that problem. I mean, like, that is a pain point of pretty much everyone. I've got that right now. So how would we reach out to you, and how would we get in touch if you're looking for some support in scaling businesses?
Easiest way is tonydesilvestro.com. And that's very simple. It's my website's right there. So you can go there. You can get an assessment set up and a call with me, anything you'd like to do. I would love to get on the phone. I get 15 minutes away all the time just to kind of talk to people. I love hearing what people are doing and they're about their businesses. So that's what the easiest way, tonydesilvestro.com. Simple.
And that wraps up another episode of the Evolve podcast. I hope you've taken inspiration and learned something from this week's interview. And I'd love to see you here next week. So please do subscribe. If you're interested in finding out more about what we're doing at Evolve, be sure to check us out by visiting goevolve.co.uk. And finally, remember, in business and in life, you never stop evolving. See you next week.